ॐ ज्ञानतिमरन्दस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनाशलाकाय चाक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपाकदा मायां ददाति सापदन्तिकम् वंशाकल्पातरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभयैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानन्द श्रियाद्वैता गदाधर श्रीवासदे घोर भक्तवृन्द Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. One time in Vrindavan, it was the winter, and very cold, and it was raining. And I went to see a sadhu who is my friend in Mathura. And Mathura is about 20 minutes, 30 minutes from Vrindavan. But in those days, we were very poor. It's not like it was now. I didn't have any personal money. And I took the public transportation with my friend, and we took what's called a tempo. A tempo is a car that was imported by India from Germany in 1938, and it hasn't changed style in 80 years. You see those big black things? And I was on the back, and it was freezing cold. And when it gets cold in Vrindavan, you really feel it because there's no heat in the buildings and there was no hot water. So when I went to Mathura, my friend wasn't there. So I heard he was developing a new temple in Vrindavan. So I went all the way there. And then I saw him, and we explained what happened. And he said, because you went through so much trouble, I will have to give you something. So I was thinking, we finished our class in June, and now I've held two extension classes. And for people, it's harder to take classes when they're not bound in by what they pay and regularity and course finish. And so these are kind of like extras. So the people that have come today have the real eagerness. And it's kind of intimate. So it's probably appropriate. We'll try to give you something. I'll tell you what my plan is. And I think we can also have more time even for discussion. I wanted to do something, but we didn't have the computer to do it. This was a disc. There's a book called Chitra Kavatwani, and it's by Rupa Goswami. It's 12, you see. He's the author of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and a main person in the Gaudiya tradition to carry on the teachings. And especially he's carrying on the teachings of what's called rasa. And rasa is the perfected consciousness of love, which is expressed in poetry, basically. So he was empowered to do this. But one of the things he did was very interesting. I can explain to you. A poet in Sanskrit is called Kavi. But Kavi, you may have 2 or 3 in 100 years. They are the absolute masters of wordcraft. And so he wrote a book where he completed 12 classical exercises for a kavi of poetry. And the exercises are like amazing. You have to write poems here's one exercise you have to do. It's called the Madanga exercise. And the poem, it goes this way, but it also goes this way and this way and this way, the same poem. Yeah, that's nothing. Look at this one. It reads the same way, this way, this way, this way, and this way. The same poem. Pretty amazing. The poem reads this way, and this way, and the same one. It's Rasavaha Salala, and it goes Rasavaha Salala, and it reads in all these different ways. And there's even one poem he wrote. Look at this one. And every time you come, you have to have the same middle word. It's just, so they've actually, and they're all poems of Krishna. And there's even one poem that he wrote with one syllable. You can have one consonant. You can have many syllables. So you have to take one consonant and write a poem. So you have to have such that's why it says to learn Sanskrit grammar, it takes 12 years. You see, the sophistication of a language will indicate the sophistication of the culture and the ideas and thoughts that have to be expressed. For example, when you use slang, it indicates there's not a very fine expression of thought, right? I mean, what I said right now, wasn't it really far out? Now, far out, was it strange? Was it great? You know, when you use one word for many, many thoughts, it's just not a very fine expression of language. So, anyway, maybe some other time I can show this. I mean, all these kind of exercises you have to do is like amazing. And what is the poem? The following verse can be arranged in the cow urine formation. So the poem is, in the wrestling arena that the Lord of the Rasa with the gopis felt great satisfaction in, that all the women there desired him and his strength blossomed. Elated, he perspired from fatigue. So it goes like this. And it's just amazing what it does. But anyway, I wanted to do that. This is, you have to arrange a poem in the form of a snake. But look how difficult it is, because it keeps on crossing different things. So you're limited. See how limited you are. So he put this whole poem, he wrote a poem that fit the whole form, where, pretty amazing, right? There's one here I'm trying to find where it says the same thing forward and backwards. So, what is that? Anyway, he was a great poet. And just wanted to share that. But the presentation is great. So what I thought I'd do today is I'm going to summarize the Nectar of Devotion or the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu again, briefly. And then I'm going to show you how those principles are applied to understanding the stories of Krishna. And this concept of rasa, because the book is called Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Sindhu means ocean. Bhakti Rasamrita. Amrita means nectar or immortality. Amrita is means not to die, or it means the drink, the drink you take, the elixir that makes you immortal, nectar, the nectar of the gods. Bhakti Ras, and Bhakti Ras is, rasa means a consuming emotion, right? And it's like tragedy, when you have tragedy or infatuation or chivalry, they consume you. So Bhakti Rasa is when you're consumed by devotion. You're absolutely overwhelmed with devotion. And in the bhakti concept, that is the perfectional stage of consciousness. And that's perfectly exemplified in the Leela of Krishna. And what Rupa Goswami discovered, and I explained this before, that was so interesting, is there was a Natya Shastra, there was a scripture of drama. And in the scripture of drama, the idea was, and it was how to compose in poetry and drama particular life experiences of tragedy or whatever in such a way that the audience would feel the same emotion. And that was called the Natya Shastra. And evidently it was channeled by Lord, it was channeled by Bharat Muni from Lord Brahma. And there was a story where Indra, who's the king of heaven, is saying, the people today are not, they're not getting the philosophy. How can we actually elevate them? And he said they need something audible and visible. So he gave the Natya Shastra, and this Muni, Bharat Muni, he channeled it. And what the Natya Shastra is, it's a very technical, dramatical theory of poetics where you can recreate a story that exemplifies an emotion, a real life experience, in such an exact and perfect way that it has maximum impact on the audience. It's very, very technical. And what happens is, and many aestheticians, they came up with different theories how this was spiritual. And one would be, material is the limited concept of I. That's material consciousness, where you're in the center, you know, and you look at everything from your filter of desire. And therefore, you see everything in relationship to your desire. And that's how you see all objects. And that's material consciousness. So one thing would happen in drama, and the Greeks would call it catharsis, is that the audience would have a experience something as if in one mind. And if any of you are teachers, you can actually feel this. When there's a good class, you're not speaking to an individual person, you're speaking to a collective mind. And when they say it's a good class, it's when everyone is, you feel they're understanding and feeling the same thing. So when that happens, they would say that you would overcome the limited concept of I. It would be a transcended experience. And whether it would be really spiritual or it would inspire you for the spiritual, they would argue. And someone would say you would have an experience. You'd feel tragedy, you'd feel romance, you'd feel a particular experience, but it wouldn't be connected with your ego. You'd have an experience without ego. And in different ways, they would discuss this. And then later, what happened is, later, Rupa Goswami, 500 years ago, he studied the stories of Krishna, which are contained in the Bhagavatam. And what he did is he realized an amazing thing, that they were perfectly composed according to the Natya Shastra, which seemed impossible because the Bhagavatam predates the Natya Shastra. So his conclusion was, is what the Bhagavatam is and what Natya Shastra is, or what the Bhagavatam is, it's not just communicating an experience in this world, but it's communicating the ultimate perfectional experience of love of Godhead, something that's eternal, something that's always existing, something that rasa vai saha, in the Upanishads it says God is that rasa. God is that experience of unlimited love and exchange between the parts of God and the absolute reality. And that's what's happening ultimately, and that's what we want to enter. So his conclusion was, it's not that Bharat Muni discovered the Natya Shastra, but it was manifest to him, but actually it's a reflection of the ultimate reality. And the ultimate reality is this lila, is this divine drama where God and those who want to play with God, those who want to participate in that, experience this overwhelming love. And this theory is actually described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to again just summarize the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and then summarize the basic principles of this theory. And then we'll read the Bhagavatam. We'll read a wonderful story today. And it's my favorite thing. The stories communicate those feelings of love and make you feel those feelings of love. That's why the Bhagavatam was written. In the Bhagavatam itself is the story of the Bhagavatam where Vyasadeva, who is the editor of all the Vedas, and the Vedas is meant what? It's teachings to support getting over ego. Every spiritual path tries to get you one way or another over the selfish concept of life where you desire to be the center and you see the world as if you are the center. And I explained that karma yoga does it because you have all these impulses that are coming. We are embodied, and the body is given for ego. There's no reason to have this body. The body is given for ego. It moves for ego. So that's so natural. You can't artificially transcend it until the platform of Gyan. So how do you deal with it in karma yoga? Responsibility and charity. Instead of following the impulses, when you follow your impulses, it's born of the false conception of life. Right? We always have that kind of fight going on. Between what? Between the ego and the impulses that come from us. And the ego, what we want to do, and truth, what we should be doing. And there's always that conflict. And sometimes satisfying the ego is what we should be doing to make us peaceful so we can transcend it. That's also there. But this fight is always going on. So in karma yoga, it says, okay, we're embodied in the world. Try to follow Dharma. Instead of following impulses, follow truth. And that will move you away from the ego. And do charity. Instead of taking all the fruits of all your work, give some of the fruits of the work for altruistic purposes. And then you come to the platform of Gyan. And what's the platform of Gyan? The platform of Gyan is when the impulses are reasonably controlled, you can practice renunciation. You can meditate and reflect on them and deny them. That's the platform of Gyan. And what Vyasadeva realized after editing the Vedas the first time, karma really is too difficult because there's just too many rules and rituals regulating your life. and modern people just can't follow them. You're always snapping your fingers and pouring water and saying mantras and prayers. It just doesn't work. And again, we're not renounced. So you said, how to overcome the ego? Overcome the ego by developing love, by developing the desire to serve and to serve God, which is inclusive of everything. And how do you do that? You hear about the most beautiful object of love. And you hear about the people who have the most love for that. And it's so attractive that you develop a desire to serve. What? Not your ego, but the object of your love. So the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu really was meant to help us understand how the pastimes of Krishna are perfect love and make us feel that, just like in a drama. If there's tragedy, you feel the tragedy. If there's romance, you feel the romance. If there's chivalry, you feel the chivalry. And if there's bhakti, you feel the bhakti. So really, part of our spiritual practice is hearing about Krishna and hearing about the pastimes of Krishna and singing the songs of Krishna. And of course, developing a mood of service. I feel one of my missions here in the Bhakti Center is to somehow find a venue to actually just speak about Krishna. I've been doing that on Tuesdays sometimes when I speak about Brahma Vimohan Lila, one of the pastimes. And it's connected to chanting the holy name, because when you develop love for Krishna, then you develop affinity for chanting the name of the person you love with relationship. And ultimately, bhakti comes to relationship. It's here in this world and it's here in perfection. We want to be a friend, a lover, a mother of Krishna, father of Krishna. And these two things actually are so important. Hearing about the activities of the name your person, of the person, of the hearing the activities of the person whose name you are chanting and worshiping the form. And that's the deities. In recently, and when I came back to Colombia, I came back early. I took an overnight flight so I can the opening of a Radha Krishna temple in New Jersey, which is the congregation where Kadamba and Kishori Radha go. And just to have the form there and wanting to serve. Kadamba just couldn't control herself. She felt overwhelmed with mercy. Jersey? Krishna's coming to Jersey? People in New York won't even come to Jersey. How merciful is Krishna? It was overwhelming, right? I mean, in Manhattan, okay, Krishna comes to Manhattan. Okay, Brooklyn, Jersey, and they're so beautiful, and they give the facility to serve. So it's all connected. This is how we have to get over the ego. We have to develop that attraction for Krishna. Prabhupada was so merciful, isn't it, that when he came to America, then he went back to India to establish Vrindavan and Mayapur, wasn't it? So that we could go and be in that world where people are absorbed in Krishna. So Let me give a little, is this okay? I give a summary? Because, you know, when you repeat things, okay, let me first test it. Have you all met Sundari Gopi? She's a new devotee she's not here. She's a new devotee. She's not a new devotee. She's an initiated disciple of Radhanath Swami, who he sent here to help the Bhakti Center. And they made her the program director. She's a very, very nice person. So, okay, let's see how I'll do this. So, because Rupa Goswami is a poet, he didn't make just chapters. The book is an ocean of nectar, so he made divisions. He made an eastern division, a southern division, a western division, and a northern division. You ever know people that they just don't want to do things that are just like everyone else? What? He wasn't a four. He was transcendental. But so this is the eastern division of the book. Are you taping it? Is that it? Or okay.
I forgot to mute it.
What?
I forgot to mute it. I'm sorry.
Okay, it's okay. So it's the eastern division, and I'll just briefly. And he discussed varieties of devotional service. And the divisions are divided into waves. I'm not going to go over it too in depth because we don't get. He divided into waves, varieties of devotional service. And this is the core philosophical basis. And this is the main study we did. And the first wave was an overview of devotional service. And he discussed, and that's the introduction in chapter one, he discussed a definition of devotional service and the characteristics of devotional service. And I'll just go over the definition. The definition is you intentionally, pure devotional service is when in your heart and in your actions, you have an intense love for God and you just want to please God. And that becomes your compass. And it's not mixed with any other motive of personal liberation or getting something for yourself. And the only, I'll give that example, I love that example of the, is this okay that we give a overview again? Is this of interest? Okay. So again, if you look at the body, all the parts of the body are meant to serve the body. So the body has a voice. And the parts are selfless when they follow the voice of the body. And when they follow the voice of the body, they're not just serving the body, they're serving themselves and they're serving everything. So in the same conception, there's a voice of God. And when you connect with that voice of God and want to connect with that voice of God, when you want to follow truth rather than your own impulses, and that's so strong within you, and what does love mean? It means you want to please. And when you want to please, what does it mean? It means the desire of someone else. So you're looking, you're wanting. And a lot of times that the desire of God comes in what is true. What is the right thing to do? So, and then Krishnanu Shilanam, When you perform with your body, your mind, and your words, you want to follow Krishna, and Krishna's desire is in the hearts of those who purely love him. And then we connect with them. And that's called Guru Parampara, the lineage, your lineage. Then you're following that. And so that definition was described and characteristics. When you do that, what happens? And you remember Kleshagni? All the troubles are gone, the kleshas, Shubhadat, so many symptoms of auspiciousness. And then when it comes not just from the intellectual intention, but when it comes from a heart imbued with love. Okay, anyway, I'll explain. So that was an overview, a general overview. And then there's three levels of devotional service. The first is called sadhana bhakti. Sadhana. Devotional service in practice. And what does that mean? When you get the objective, right, that this is the goal, to connect with the divine, the universal body. We're a part of the universal body. Harmony is happiness, and harmony means whatever you're part of, the different aspects have common interest. This harmony in my body, because they're all serving the common interest of the will of the body. So there's sadhana bhakti, when you have that objective and you use your senses to develop that objective, which basically means to somehow absorb yourself and connect with Krishna, thinking of Krishna in various activities of the mind, words, and body, that brings the bhakti into your heart. And that's the main practice. When you're chanting, it's Krishna. And when you're focused on that, it will bring out the natural love in your heart for Krishna. Or worshiping the deities, or doing humbly service. And he gave 64 of those. And there's two divisions. We're not going to go over that today. There's Vaidhi, where the impetus for that practice, I guess I am going to go over it. The impetus for that practice is the understanding that I should do this. And then there's Raganuga Bhakti, where the impetus becomes your natural love for Krishna in a particular relationship. And that's how you focus your mind, not just because I understand I should do it. We develop a natural attraction. And then there's bhava bhakti. By that intense purification of the heart, your heart completely softens and you develop intense desire that you want to be with Krishna, you want to have an intimate relationship with Krishna, and you want to serve Krishna. And when that intensifies to the maximum degree, it's the goal of life. It's called prema bhakti. I realize I can't explain everything in depth. I'll just get lost someplace here and never get around. So, anyone have any questions? Yes. Not your Shastra. Yeah.
I just want to hear your conception of having an experience, like, you know, let's say chivalry or whatever.
Yeah.
Without ego, what does that mean? Having it without ego.
Because there's a drama is based on something in real life. So there's a character in real life, and his chivalry is based on his ego, and his romance is based on his ego, and his tragedy is based on his ego. Now, when an expert aesthetician or dramatist uses a Natya Shastra, he'll recreate that real life experience in drama. And then the audience, if it's done, will experience it. But it's not that person's tragedy. It's not that person's romance. It's not that person's tragedy. So it's an experience, but it's divorced from your own ego. You may watch a tragedy, right? But even though you feel sad or there's a romance and you feel it, it's not yours. It's someone else's. So somehow they say it's like an experience divorced of your own ego. It's not yours. You have the experience, but it's not coming from you and the world and you trying to position yourself and everything. You just have an experience. You have a pure experience.
I guess you just have to experience it.
Experience. Yeah, okay. Okay, now... Okay, I'm really... We're going to divide the class in half. The first half will be the summary. Then we'll take a break, and then we'll get into the Bhagavatam. Okay, now this rasa or bhakti rasa which means this overwhelming experience of bhakti or anything, the Natya Shastra and the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu says that for an emotional experience to reach its height, it's like making a preparation, cooking something. There's ingredients that are involved. And if the ingredients are mixed properly, then the preparation will be suitable for a connoisseur. And if one of the ingredients is not there, a person who really knows food, I'm giving a food example, won't appreciate it. I'll give you an example. The example he gives is sweet rice. Now, on Prabhupada's disappearance day, in upstate where I was, I left early the next morning with Michael and Champak. And we had perfect sweet rice. You can't believe how good it was. And I only took a half a cup, a little cup, just to taste. It was so good. In fact, the guy who cooks it, it's so good, it should be a banned substance. You can't believe how good it is, his sweet rice. What? Baladev Vidyabhushana. Whatever he cooks, whatever this person cooks is just unbelievable. But what it has is the milk is not too thin or too thick. It's perfect. The rice is not overcooked or undercooked. It's perfect. It's not too sweet. It's not too little sweet. The saffron in it was just the right color. What did you think of that sweet rice? Amazing, right? 5 pounds, 10 pounds?
10.
You fasted the next day.
Of course.
The sweet rice was so good. So a connoisseur will appreciate it. And some people just like, if it's milk, it's sugar. It's rice, it's great prep. But a connoisseur, they'll only eat the best. So what's described is God is a connoisseur of love. So his lila is perfect love. And in drama, For drama in the Natya Shastra, there are five components, emotional experiences. When they combine together perfectly, they make love at its height. In reality and in drama. It's a very, so there's vibhav, there's anubhav, there's sattvika bhav, there's vyabhachari bhav, and there's stai bhav. It should be vibhav. Vibhav means the basic cause of ecstasy. And the basic cause of ecstasy is the devotee and Krishna. If it's conjugal love, then the devotee must be a young gopi girl, and Krishna must appear between 11 and 15. If it's motherly love, then it must be the mother and Krishna as a baby. If it's a friend, it's Krishna as a young boy between 6 and 10 is the object of love, and his friends. So there must be the right combination of, this is so, you know, One second. I realize I'm not going to be able to explain this, just give you. So vibhav, the basic cause of love, there must be an ashraya and a vishaya. There must be a subject and object of love that are appropriate for each relationship. Otherwise, it won't be the right ingredients. And there must be udipan, something that lights the love, the smiling face of the child. You see Krishna's flute, his footprints. There's something like a match that has to light that love. So that's the basic cause. Krishna, the object of love, the devotee, the subject of love in a particular relationship, and something. Then anubhav, there must be actions in love. In each relationship, they'll be different. For the mother, when her love arises in the heart, she may pat the child on the head. If it's the servant, he'll pay obeisances, a different action. So each relationship has different actions in love. This is also very practical in real life. Because if you actually know this, you'll also know how to develop relationships in real life that actually mature into the proper love. I'll give you an example of Rasa Bas, where it doesn't come to real life. And I always tell this story. My father would sit in his chair in the living room, and we had a three-bedroom house, so three bedrooms are on the top floor, and you'd walk down to the living room, and my father would be sitting in his chair, right? So let's say in parental feelings, right? The mood of love in parental feelings is mercy. It must have some sense of there's someone of respect or need. And I would walk downstairs and I'd walk past my father and I'd say, "How you doing, Wally?" And my father was a master mason. That's worshipful, Walter Winokur. So he's a little bit formal. He was a master mason. So, good father. We should have a real father. A real father is not just a friend that plays with you. There's a respectable, it allows you to nourish the feelings of respect. And I said, "How are you doing, Wally?" He goes, "I am not your friend, I am your father." And I said, "Okay, Wally," run out. I am not your friend, I am your father. So I remember when I, so there must be the proper actions for whatever the relationship is. Then sattvic abhav means for really to become rasa, this overwhelming consuming, there must be emotional experiences that are overwhelming. Hairs standing on end, fainting, trembling. And then vyabhachari bhav means there must be auxiliary emotions that are born from this all is happening in a lila of pastime. So all these things are being churned. Vyabhachari bhav means sometimes there's jubilation, sometimes there's fear, sometimes there's anxiety, but it's born from the ocean of love and it increases the ocean of love, like an ocean. They're like waves. It's churning. And I'll just give you an example. One story is the gopis are going to sell milk. So to go over Govardhan Hill, it's very high. But there's one little path that one person can fit through. So they, Radhe, Govind. Shut this off now. No. Radhe, Govinda, Govinda. And then they see Krishna, right? So Krishna is standing there, right? So, okay, Krishna, as Nova Yovanam, he's in his, between 11 and 15, he's a teenager. And then you have the proper Shraya for this romantic love, which is the gopis, right? And now the Udipan, they see Krishna's peacock feather and his stick in his side and his yellow dhoti and his lotus eyes. And then they become very fearful. What that rascal may do. And then they become angry. How dare he do that? And then they become very jubilant. Oh, he's so beautiful. And then jealous. He looked at someone else. So there's actually 33 vyabhachari bhavs, auxiliary emotions. And each relationship has different ones that bring it to its height. And then staibhav, this means permanent. So each relationship with Krishna has a staibhav, a permanent feeling. And there are different flavors of love. For example, parental feeling is anugraha. Anugraha means mercy. Motherly love, the feeling is, I am your maintainer. And therefore, in real motherly love, even when you're 35 and have children of your own, Madhavi, she won't look at you as competent and capable. She'll say, Madhavi, you're going to get sick. Put on your hat. You'll go, Mom, since I'm 14, I've been telling you that I'm okay. I can do it myself. I'm 35 years old now. Say, Madhavi, please, you'll get sick. She'll never see, because that's the motherly love. The motherly love is, I am your maintainer. Right? That's the feeling. But if the relationship is not motherly love, but the relationship is servant, if you're to servant, then the feeling of love is exactly the opposite. If you have a master, your mood of love is, you are my maintainer. And that's your flavor of love. So each relationship with Krishna has a different flavor of love that never changes. Where the vyabhachari bhavs, the sattvika bhavs, the anubhavs, and the vibhavs, they may change. So this, in Krishna's lila, you'll see the different relationships and you'll see all these emotions within the lila or the pastimes churning it so that the love becomes rasa, an overwhelming emotion. And that's expressed in the Bhagavatam. And when you read it, it's supposed to communicate and make you have those feelings itself. I'll give you an example. The staibhav. Okay, I'll give you an example. Is this okay?
Yes.
Some understanding?
Yeah.
Okay. You never get this in the ordinary classes. But I am explaining what the... Okay. So, let's take Vatsalya Ras. Vatsalya Ras means parental love. And Krishna is Akila Ras Amrita Murti. He's enjoying all varieties of love. Because he doesn't come as the boss. When you're the boss, when you're the creator, when you're the maintainer, you can't feel parental love. You can't feel friendship. You're way above. You can only feel servitude. So Vatsalya Ras. Okay. So the Stai Bhav of that is Anugraha. Anugraha. I am your maintainer. That's motherly love. Without me, you die. Then there's Stai Bhav. Okay. And then the Vibhav, the basic cause of love, will be Krishna as a baby and his mothers, whether it's Yasoda or Devaki. And the Udipan will be Krishna's smiling face, his little chubby legs, you know, his cute smile, his trying to walk. And then the Anubhav, Mother Yasoda's breast will fill up with milk and she'll feed her kid. Or she'll pat him on the head and give him blessings if he's in trouble. And then the Sattvika Bhav, Krishna's in the Kaliya serpent and he's about to die. And Mother Yasoda runs up and she faints. Ah, boom. There's 8 Sattvika Bhavs. So that's one of the Sattvika Bhavs. She almost faints. And then the Vyabhachari Bhav, she may be in anxiety. Oh, my son is in danger. So in all the pastimes, every relationship, all these are, and to have them perfect, you can't actually believe. When you go in this Natya Shastra and Rupa Goswami, you know what the introduction is, how you create the scene. I'll show you what chapter in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Sometimes in Puri I teach that. And it creates, and Krishna, God, is Rasika. He's a connoisseur. And he's enjoying the love in the Leela of all this. Now back to the nectar of devotion. So this is the southern division, and it has 5 waves. And what are those? And you can go back to my Waves of Devotion and the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu to study this. It's fascinating. It's more fascinating than you can believe. When you see the technicalities of how all this is put together and how perfectly it's created. So the first chapter is Vibhav. It explains what it is. Then it explains Anubhav, Sattvika Bhav, Vyabhachari Bhav, Stai Bhav. The 5 ingredients of rasa are explained. Now, what is the Western division? The Western division describes what are the 5 relationships you can have with Krishna. For example, you can have Shantaras. And then it'll describe in Shantaras, what is the Vibhav, what is the Anubhav, what is the Sattvik Bhav. For example, in Shantaras, who see the immanence of God, who are the Ashraya and Vishaya, who are the subject of, well, the object of love is Narayan, God, who is the creator and controller. And who is the subject of love? the Gyanis and the Tapasvis. And what are their Anubhavs? Their Anubhavs are putting their finger up here and declaring a point or meditating, and then they have particular sattvika bhavs of awe and wonder and different things that can, and then it'll describe dasyaras, the servants. So who are the servants and who's the object of love? Well, they describe all the various types of servants Krishna has all through, and the different types and different moods. There's the parishads, who are very intimate servants, and then there are, so it'll go, and then sakiras, friendship will be described, and at the same time, it'll describe in detail who are the different friends of Krishna, what are their actions when you're a friend, you may be playing, what are the vyabhichari bhavs, and which are suitable for each relationship. Because an anubhav for one relationship, like a friend, I'll give you an example of rasabhas. Rasabhas means where one of the ingredients is not good. You put too much sugar in, blah. Too little sugar in this, blah. It's a little milky, ah. Little pasty, ah. The rice is mushy, ah. So if one of the ingredients, I'll give you, they gave an example. Krishna became a king, and he had a friend. Now, Krishna became a king. He had a friend. So in the drama, the friend saw Krishna and said, please accept my humble obeisances. But that's rasabhas, because friends are equals. They should hug each other. Not one should worship another friend. Now, if Krishna... So you see, there's different relationships. It's very technical. But if you read my Waves of Devotion, if you have a minute, you'll see how beautifully it's constructed. I don't even think I have time to go over the Northern Division right now. But it gives some more technicalities. So what I want to do now is I want to study and go over a story in the Bhagavatam and show you how this works and how relishable it is when you understand it. How does that sound? Should we take a 5-minute break now? Go straight? Okay, I'll tell you what. I'll go 15 minutes and then we'll take a break for a few minutes and then we'll complete it and we'll end on. Is this interesting?
Yes.
You can understand? Okay. Okay, so I'm going to show you one story, and it's very, it's so relishable. So I'll tell you. What? Vyabhichari Bhav. In my book, you just, Waves of the Book, you just read the chapter. It means if you have motherly love, the motherly love, the staibhav would be like an ocean. The staibhav would be like an ocean, right? And the ocean would have waves. The waves would come and go. So let's say you have motherly love, right? So you have some anxiety, and it'll be a wave that will increase your love, right? It comes from the ocean and increases the ocean. Or you may have, there's 33 listed. You know, you may be, disappointed or jubilant. So there are all these transitory emotions. Okay. Okay, now we will take a break, though, in about 15 minutes. And that'll be a 5-minute break. And then I want to, because it's going to be, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So I'm going to start in the middle of this story. And just show you a little bit how this works and how relishable it is. In fact, in Vrindavan, I remember about 15 years ago, I took these two straight-edge kids, Paramananda and Narottam, and I took them to Vrindavan. And it was in the month of July, the rainy season. It's a little hot. But at that month, called Shravan, there's about 50 drama groups doing dramas of Krishna Leela. And in fact, deities of Krishna can be made out of seven types of substance. You can make it out of wood. You can make it out of paint. You can make it out of metal. You can make it out of jewels. You can make it in the sand and people. So they would have only, generally young boys, they play Radha and Krishna before they reach maturity. And they would become superstars in Vrindavan, the best ones. And they would be musicals with Krishna drama. So one of the most famous places is Jai Singara. So I remember we took, and what you'll see is you'll see all these saintly widows and old sadhus, and they'll be sitting, chanting, and watching these dramas. Because the idea was the dramas would encapsulate the feelings. And, you know, even when this classical kirtan, a lot of times they would have bhajans first. Because what bhajans would do is they would create a mood, and then you would enter into the kirtan. Like one of my favorite songs is Navanirada Nindita Kanti Param Rasa Sagara Nagara Bhupa Param Shubhankim Charu Sikanda Sikam Raja Krishna Nidim Raja Raja Sita Raja Krishna Nidim Raja Raja. And after singing the song, the poetics, it would put a mood. And then you would enter into the kirtan. Or when it's Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Garanga Karuna Koro Hina Hina Jane Garanga Karuna Koro Hina Hina Jane Mosama Patita Prabhu Nahi pa. You know it? What? Most ama patita. Yeah. Nachi bhuvane. Garanga karuna ko. Without your mercy. Yeah, I am the most fallen person. There are just so many songs with so many moods. Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe, Radhe, Jai Radhe, Jai Si. Shama Gauri, Nitya Kishore, Prithama Jori, Si Radhe, Lasika rasilo, chai la chabilo, kunagara bilo, si. So many beautiful songs with so many moods, and they're put into the. So I'll begin, and we'll see if we can tell this story. It'll be very good. So I'll just read one verse, and I'll tell the beginning, and then we'll come back and I'll tell the end. Mam gyapayatta patnibhya sasankarshanam agatam dasyanti kamananam va snigdhamayushita diya. Lord Krishna said, tell the wives of the Brahmins that I have come here with Lord Sankarsana. They will certainly give you all the food you want, for they are most affectionate towards me. And indeed, their intelligence resides in me alone. Om Jnana Timarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Taksu Tasmai Sri Gurudeva Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati sa padantikam Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha Kripa sindhu bayevacha Patitanam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare
Hare Rama, Hare Rama Rama, Rama, Hare Hare.
So a story like this, I usually lecture for 30 days before I complete it. So the story begins with Krishna's friends, and they come to Krishna and they tell Krishna that you are Dushta Bahana, you are the destroyer of the wicked, we're hungry, why don't you give us some food? So here it is. There's Sakyaras, friendship, the feeling of equality. And therefore, even though Krishna is God, they can joke with him. And that's Anubhav. Friends joke. That's one thing they do among each other. If you're dealing with your master, if your relationship is in Dasyaras or Shantaras, where the object of your love is superior, then the joking would be inappropriate. Just like when Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna became Arjuna's guru, he was his friend. When he became his guru, it says, Prahasan Iva Bharata, he was like smiling. Why was he like? So he was smiling, my friend has become my disciple, but like smiling, because now that he was the guru, the relationship was a little bit more serious. So it wasn't as much joking. So now his friends, he says, you're the destroyer of the wicked. We're hungry. Now you get the food. And then you see Krishna. He's very, very merciful. So he begins to think of certain devotees. And which devotees he's thinking of? He's thinking of the wives of the Brahmins, because they're great devotees, but they've never seen Krishna. But Krishna listens to the heart of his devotees. Later, when they come to Krishna and they see Krishna, they give Krishna so much pleasure Because you offer more than you go before the deities to see the deities. Darshan means that actually you, God sees you. And that what you're offering to God is your heart. Not just your standing before to see God. When Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he had a temple like this and his bedroom was here, Prabhupada's guru. And when he would come out of the bedroom in the morning and the deities were there, we'd take off his glasses. And then people said, well, why are you taking off your glasses? And he said that I'm taking off my glasses because I'm not coming to see the deity. I'm coming to be seen by the deity. So this is actually, it very beautifully expresses what the process of bhakti is. And when your heart is purified, that's what gives God pleasure. Because the ultimate platform of reality is this rasa, it's love. And what is the pleasure of love? It's someone else's heart, which is given to you. That's what pleasure is. Pleasure is love. And so God is, and our practices are not just external. Our practices are offering our hearts. Because what is bhakti again? Bhakti is Krishnanushilanam. Krishnanushilanam means our activities are to please Krishna. What ultimately pleases Krishna? What ultimately pleases Krishna is our hearts, is our love. There's a shakti of God called the Ladini Shakti. It's called the pleasure potency. And what is the pleasure potency? The essence is Krishna praying. What ultimately pleases God is his internal, his bliss potency. And what's his bliss potency? His bliss potency is bhakti or love. That's what pleasure is. And without love, there's no pleasure no matter what you do. Can you imagine someone who has everything in the world, but he has no love? No one loves him. Can he have any happiness? All happiness is in relationship. In those five. In your friendship, in intimate partnership, in parental love or respect, in mood of service, all our pleasure is the exchange of love. That is the ultimate reality. And the ultimate consciousness is when we perfect that. And what this is showing is perfect love. And the perfect object of love is God. Because he's Krishna. He's all attractive. And he's a person. He perfectly reciprocates. God is all powerful and he's good. If he's not good, he won't want to help you. And if he's not all powerful, he can't help you. So this is an exchange of love. And also, even if they see, if the child sees the mother and goes, "Mommy, mommy, I'm hungry," is that selfish or is that love? It's love. But if the mother goes to the child, "Madhavi, Madhavi, I'm hungry," because it's not the bhav. Her love for you, or your love, is you are my maintainer. It's got to be within limits, Madhavi. Don't use the philosophy now to milk a dumba dry. She's already fine. Okay? But a certain love. You love the mother because the mother nourished you. And I see sometimes in India, I remember there was a joint family in India that I would stay with. An amazing family. And there was one brother. He was probably as handsome as Krishna. He sung bhajans like I never heard. Meri man mandir meka bar tum ajaho girit hari vanawari girit hari vanawari meri man mandir eka. Oh, Giriraj, come into the courtyard of my heart. He would sing these bhajans. And he never got married. And wasn't the least bit frustrated. Usually when someone doesn't get married, sometimes it's like sour grapes. One time in the movement, this was it. There was a story where all the heavy monks got together and they got in the bus. The Hare Krishna monks. And the people who ran the temples were all married with the children. And they'd run in the temples and they would take away all the young monks and they would preach against the married people. Oh, you're just going to pay for their diapers and they're just in Maya. And it became such a conflict because they travel around the country and they take all the young people out of the temples. And it became such a conflict it went to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada saw this was a huge conflict. You know, because on one side it was all these sannyasis like myself, and the other hand there was the married people. And it was a conflict. And Prabhupada, I'll make a long story short, he sided with the married people. And the person who was doing this, he got on his case. And the person said, I might as well go to China. Prabhupada said, okay. And he sent him to China. But then afterwards, some of the monks were still not satisfied. And something said to Prabhupada, but what if this? And then Prabhupada said, you know, something, it was funny, but I don't remember. But no one would marry you, and now you're complaining. But the fact is, this person was incredibly, but he was so deep in his heart in bhakti. And there were five brothers, and one brother's job was just to take care of the mother, the old mother. And you never saw such love. And even though he was taking care of the mother, the mood of love was so strict. The mother was a simple lady, an old lady, that no one in that house could leave the house without asking the mother's permission. The mood was so much that she was the maintainer, she was the nourisher, they glorify her, and she was a simple lady. So there's a perfection of that love in the ultimate reality, as a perfection of friendship. So now Krishna is reciprocating, because Prabhupada said that God doesn't have the defect of impersonality. So now he's thinking of these devotees who love him and never met him. So he tells the cowherd boys to go. Should we just plow through towards the end? We have about 45 minutes. Anybody has to go to the bathroom, they'll go, okay? Can we turn up the air conditioning a little bit? We turned it up? What? I want it up, not off. Is that okay?
Yeah.
I felt it's a little... What? What?
It was perfect.
It was perfect?
No, it was hot.
Well, I'm glad you two are already married. Because Okay, I still won't be able to demonstrate. So Krishna, there's Leela. So now there's pastime. So he sends the friends to beg from some Brahmins. And these Brahmins, they know the Vedas, but they don't know the essence of the Vedas because they're seeking material things. So they come to the Brahmins and they say, Krishna's hungry, he's nearby. and all auspiciousness. We're going to give you service. If you have faith, O knower of the Vedas, Dwija, you know what Dwija means? It means twice born. Because when you're from a Brahmin, the first birth is from the mother and the father, and the second birth is from the guru. It's called your second birth. But they say Dwija. Dwija also means what? Dwi, two, ja, one who's born of two. So there's so much materialistic, they actually say them, O Dwija, one who is born of two people, rather than one who's twice born. So then the Brahmins, they're going swaha, 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 and they completely ignore Krishna, Krishna's friends who are begging food. So they come back to Krishna now, and they're disappointed because they weren't able to beg food for Krishna. So that's Vyabhachari Bhav. From their friendship comes disappointment. And that disappointment is increasing their love in the Leela. Now they're really disappointed. We wanted to bring you food. We were coming to beg on your behalf. Now we couldn't get any food. So the Leela is churning. So now Krishna says, you go to the wives of the Brahmins, and they will certainly give you the food because they're affectionate to me. And with their intelligence, they reside in me alone. So what is intelligence? Intelligence is when you live within the self. Just like when you're doing japa meditation, if you do it properly, then what you'll see is some feelings will come from the heart. Some feelings of devotion will come from the heart. And what yoga means is you live in the self, and you'll distinguish it, those feelings, from the things that come from the false ego. When you begin your japa, then there's all the anxieties based on me, all the fears based on me, all the discomforts based on me. And there's this thing that always says, me, 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 me. I'm uncomfortable. I don't like to do this. I don't. But if you actually concentrate and you keep on focusing, then by meditating on the object of meditation, which is Krishna, which is an object of devotion, the potency of the object of love, which is Krishna, it will bring out the love in your heart. This is sadhana bhakti, devotional service and practice. Your object is to develop love. You focus your consciousness one way or the other on the object of love. And then some sentiments of devotion, gratitude, the mood of service, they'll come out of your heart, and you'll try to live in that rather than all the voices of the mind of selfishness. You'll try to live in that. So here Krishna says, go to these devotees, even though those are Brahmins, it's all about themselves. But there are actually real devotees there, and they have affection for God in their heart, and with their intelligence, they reside or live in the soul. They live in those feelings of devotion and gratitude and humility and service. You go to them. And the cowherd boys, they then went to the house where the Brahmin wives were staying. There the boys saw those chaste ladies sitting, nicely decorated with fine ornaments, bowing down to the Brahmin ladies. They addressed them in all humility. Obeisances unto you, O wives of the learned Brahmins. Kindly hear our words. We've been sent by Lord Krishna, who is passing by not far from here. So the cowherd boys, one of the actions of love, if you are a mood of service to Krishna, and within every higher relationship, all the other moods. If you're a parent, you also have the mood of service and friendship on your own level. So they're in the mood of serving Krishna, their friend. And the anubhav, the action of service, is carrying out the order. And it's not these anubhavs or these actions, they're not just actions, they're emotions. For example, if Prabhupada walked in, he's my guru, I'm in the mood of dasyaras to guru, he is my father, he is my master, so that's the vibhav, and then I see Prabhupada in his cane. Let's just say if Prabhupada walked in. So the sthaibhav, the emotion would be, the sthaibhav would be dasyaras, the mood of service. That would always be there. And then the vibhav, the cause of the devotion, would be guru or Prabhupada and his disciple. And the also within the vibhav is the udipan, what lights it. So you'd see Prabhupada, you'd see his walk, you'd see his face, his glasses. And then anubhav, the actions in love. I pay my obeisances, I pay dandavats, I go out flat. But it wouldn't just be an action, it's an emotion that increases the love. And then there could be even sattvika bhavs. Someone starts to cry uncontrollably. See, the anubhav, they're actions, but they go through the intelligence. Let me pay my obeisances. But the sattvika bhavs come through the pure soul. Cry. Someone just be break down in tears. I've seen this happen. Just break down in tears. And what is that? That's a sattvika bhav. That increases the guru bhakti. And then vyabhachari bhav, Prabhupada may fall, you may get an anxiety, or you may be jubilant, you may see Prabhupada smile, you may be in anxiety, maybe I'll do something wrong. So all these would churn together to bring the dasya bhav, guru bhakti, to an overwhelming experience. So here the cowherd boys, they love Krishna so much. They want to serve Krishna even as their friends, and now they're carrying out his order. And in that order now, they, with humility, and they offer obeisances to these, and now they tell the wives of the Brahmins. Now, the wives of the Brahmins, their relationship with Krishna is a mood of conjugal. They're very attracted to Krishna. And we'll see how they became attracted to Krishna. So it's the sthaibhav would be this conjugal mood. And of course, this is not mundane. It's not ordinary. And the udipan, it will be Krishna. Krishna is nearby. They're telling that Krishna's come. And he's nearby. And we'll see how the rasa develops with them, okay? So this is their mood. And now he has come a long way with the cowherd boys. We have been sent by Krishna, who is passing not far from here. Now, what goes on in their hearts? They have pure love for Krishna. They've never seen him. Now, Krishna is passing nearby. So it's not all mentioned, but you can imagine what's churning in their hearts. What are the vyabhachari bhavs of anticipation and maybe anxiety? Maybe we won't see him. Of jubilation, he's going to come close. You know, whatever it is. So they're all from the ocean of their permanent mood of love. Now, so many auxiliary emotions are churning their hearts. He has come a long way with cowherd boys and Lord Balaram tending the cows. He is hungry, so some food should be given to him. So now they have service. And when you're given service, it churns your heart. When you have love for someone and they offer service, honestly speaking, generally I speak on one verse a day for 30 days, but because you really can get into them. And what the great acharyas or the great teachers used to do, they would pray to words and whole poems would come out. Because there's only 5 chapters about Krishna, but hundreds and hundreds of thousands of poems and stories. In fact, there was one guy from Brooklyn, and he became a devotee, a disciple of Prabhupada, and he was a kavi. He was a modern-day kavi. And he learned Sanskrit, and he translated all the Goswami literature. The first one, we never saw any of the Goswami literature practically in English. His name was Kushikrata. And then, after he finished translating all the Sanskrit literature, and he was very eccentric too. There's a prayer where we offer respects, Vansha Kalpa Tarubhyascha, Kripa Sindhu, you know, the Vansha Kalpa, that the Vaishnavas are like desire trees, they can fulfill the desires of everyone and they're full of compassion. So every time he would see me or anybody else, he would go, Vanchakalpas. But he wrote, he finished translating in Sanskrit 20,000 sonnets about Krishna's pastimes in perfect iambic pentameter. He wrote 3 complete novels on Krishna's pastimes. Every day he would write 5 poems. And when he was dying, I was called into his room. Someone said, he's dying. So I went. I was there when he was dying. You know who was taking care of him, Michael? Baladev Vidyabhushana. He was taking care of him when he was dying. And then after, you know, you have to roll the body over. And he had cancer. He died of cancer. It was the 5 poems he wrote the day he had cancer. And it was unbelievable, the poetry written. And anyway, the wives of the Brahmins were always eager to see Krishna, for their minds had been enchanted by descriptions of him. Thus, as soon as they heard that he had come, they became very excited. They became very excited. They became very excited. So this is the ocean of their love, and they became excited. It's like a wave that increases the ocean, their excitement. And then what happens here, it's not mentioned in the commentaries, they faint. Krishna is coming. Sattvic above. They faint. Involuntary action. They just faint. And then when they wake up from fainting, what do? They curse themselves. And why do they curse themselves? Hmm. O you low minds, although you heard that beloved Krishna is suffering from hunger, why did you not wake up from fainting? One curses ecstasy when it impedes service. And the wives began criticizing their own minds. So here it is. They became disappointed. And so, again, so all these emotions, they're excited, they're disappointed, they're jubilant. It's increasing. They faint. So it's all churning this ocean of love for Krishna in their conjugal feelings. And God is enjoying that love. Taking along in large vessels the four kinds of food, full of fine taste and aroma, all the ladies went forth to meet their beloved, just as rivers towards the sea. So they bring the four types of food stuff. Immediately they start cooking. So what is that? That's Anubhav. They start to serve. And they start to cook. They start to do things. And it's not just an action, it's an emotion. It's an action that follows. And what do they cook? Fine taste and aroma. Why? Because when you love someone, you try to please them. You try to make it as nice as possible. And then what happens is, they went forth to meet their beloved, Krishna, as rivers flow to the sea. Because when bhakti enters into your heart, real bhakti at this level, then what happens is it's the strongest, most pleasurable emotion one can imagine. And it's so good that there's nothing better than it. And there's nothing more painful than giving it up. So if you have something in which nothing is better than, and there's nothing more painful than giving it up, then how do you stop it? And there's no motive. You have no motive. It's just love. You're not doing it for anything. If you're doing it for something, you could. Like if you're doing it for money, take away the money, the activity stops. If there's a relationship between a boy and girl and they're doing it for sensual feelings, the sensual feeling stops, the relationship stops. Then one kills the other. It's motivated. This is pure love. It's a hoitaki apratiyata. You can't break it. You can't. So as the rivers flow towards the sea, when a river flows towards the sea, the rock comes and the water, you can't stop a river going to the sea. So this is a description of their love. Their hearts are just churning. Although their husbands, brothers, sons, and other relatives tried to forbid them from going, their hope of seeing Krishna, cultivated by extensive hearing of his transcendental qualities, won out. So his flowing from the sea, there's your husbands, your brothers, and they're chaste ladies. And you know why they're chaste? They never go out alone. They always go in groups. But when they're stopped from seeing Krishna, get out of my way, I'll kill you. Stop me, you're dead. Get out of my way. Now, married ladies here, please do not get any ideas. Cybele, serve the husband, don't, you know. But how did they get this? This hope of seeing Krishna that was so strong that no petty habits, obstacles, desires can stop it. How did they get it? By extensively hearing about this. And how did they hear about this? Anybody remember? Julie?
The gopis would talk about it at the marketplace.
Yeah, they're the wives, and the husbands say, oh, we need milk for the sacrifice today, and we need some flowers. They said, okay, we'll go to the market. Who's sitting there selling the milk? The gopis. And what do the gopis have? Love for Krishna. And what's the main symptom of love? You talk about your beloved. That's why a paramour lover always gets caught. Because they just, I've actually seen it, and I'm glad this lady didn't go that way, but I was watching it. She was just talking about this man. And then one of her relatives came to me and said, please do that. Please do something. I think nothing happened. But you can't hide it. So they're there, and they love Krishna. And when you talk about love, it is love. And just like we're talking about now, it has an effect. It's a beautiful thing. The object of love is beautiful. The subject, the people who love, is beautiful. And it's just churning. And they're just... So they're buying the flowers, and it's Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 Pahi Mam. Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava, Pahi Mam. Anyway, Beethoven got that from the gopis. Just wanted to tell you that. Krishna, 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 Krishna. It's so attractive. Even sometimes you don't like. I remember, I'll tell a story. I was getting into Krishna consciousness. My parents were really freaking out. So what do they decide to do? They decide to try to give me a higher taste by taking me to a Broadway show. And it was called Enter Laughing. It was absolutely the most boring thing I've ever seen. But what happens? So I'm outside with my parents, and those days in New York, the devotees used to go out on street Harinam all over the place. So what happens? And a Harinam party comes over, and who is on the Harinam party, but my college roommate, who I got into Krishna consciousness with, who was the most intense person in the world. So he looked at me, and he saw me there, and he gave me a hug like this, like electrified. And my parents are like watching. So then later my father said, during the whole drama, the whole thing, I couldn't enjoy the drama. All I was thinking about was Krishna, 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 Krishna. Can't stop thinking of Krishna. So along the river Jamuna, with a garden decorated with buds of Ashok trees. Anybody ever seen Ashok tree? They're very beautiful trees, and they can be shaped in different ways, and they're very auspicious. When you come into the ISKCON Govardhan, they're there. Ashoka Viksha Vala Rivatana Manda Pastate Pravala Vala Pala Vaprabharu Nangri Komale Parabhayasparat Kare Prabhuta Sampadalaye Kadakarisya Sihamam Kripa Kataksha Bhajanam. You see this poetry? Ashoka Viksha. These beautiful trees in a garden. They caught sight of him strolling along in the company of the cowherd boys and his elder brother Balaram. So they see Krishna. And what is Krishna and Balaram doing? What are the cowherd boys doing? Kirtan. They're always doing kirtan. So you see the cowherd boys and Krishna, and they may be doing kirtan. Yaso mati nandana braja bara nagara gokula ranjana kana Gopi Paranadana Madana Manahara Kaliya Dama Dabidan Amala Harina Mamiya Vilasa Amala Harina Mamiya Vilasa. I was once with this kind of devotee from New York, and this other devotee, he would do, he would tell the stories and then he'd break out into song. And then the drum would come. I don't know. The guy turned to me, says, did the drum come with the hall? But anyway. So they see them. And then what do they see? His complexion was dark blue and his garment golden, wearing a peacock feather, colored minerals, sprigs of flower buds, and a garland of forest flowers and leaves. He was dressed just like a dramatic dancer. He rested on one hand upon the shoulder of a friend, and with the other twirled a lotus. Lilies graced his ears. His hair hung down over his cheeks, and his lotus-like face was smiling. His smile, there was so much happiness in him, taking out the cows in the Vrindavan forest with his friends. There was so much happiness exchanging with the friends and the cows in the beautiful forest of Vrindavan. And as he entered into the forest of Vrindavan, all the animals of the forest of Vrindavan came out of love to offer Krishna the best. The peacocks are so beautiful that they come and they start dancing out of love to offer Krishna the beautiful peacock feathers. And the birds sing in a symphony to Krishna's flute. And the beautiful does, the beautiful deers, they look with their sidelong like cuteness offered to Krishna. And then tall, stately trees with red, beautiful flowers, they began to bend towards Krishna's lotus feet, offering him the best. And then the bees begin to follow Krishna like great sages, but they're sages. They're doing kirtan. They're singing. They're not hidden. So they see, and Krishna has these beautiful flowers in his ears. So his hair is tucked back and it's cascading, beautiful black hair. And Natabara, he's like a beautiful dancer in his threefold bending form and his lotus eyes. And this is the first time they've ever seen him. Just even, you know, a lot of times young girls and young boys, let's take young girls or young boys, and they hear about rock stars, they never seen him, they, you know, whatever it is. And you know, of course the desire is like sex desire or something low, it's not pure love, but they see, you know, a beautiful guy or a beautiful girl, and you know, and then they finally see him. But it's not this pure love. I remember watching in my parents' living room in 1961, when the Beatles came to America and they were on the Ed Sullivan show, and the girls were like screaming the first time they saw the Beatles. You ever see those films? They were absolutely screaming. But it was born of the ego. It was superficial. It didn't last, but this is coming from the soul. They're seeing Krishna, whom they have the most natural relationship because they're part of God and they're meant for God's service as much as the hand is connected to the body. And this feeling, so what's happening now is these feelings are just churned and they're coming to this rasa. And now there'll be a lila that just churns it and churns it more. This is a nice, beautiful description that there is an ultimate reality of love. Whether or not seeing Krishna's pastimes, we project our own conceptions on them to a certain extent. But just look at the beauty of it, that if there is an absolute reality, it's something that's churning love to the highest degree, and that we can participate in it. And if there is a God, why wouldn't that be so? What could be more beautiful than that? Who can perfect the? What could be more beautiful than an ultimate reality where there's the perfect object of love, the perfect lover, the perfect friend, the perfect child, the perfect master, the perfect God, with perfect feelings of love and circumstances? God, it's described in the Bhagavatam that he has a lila shakti, a pastime potency that moves everything for this perfect exchange of love. O ruler of men, for a long time those Brahmin ladies had heard about Krishna, their beloved. And this is, you know, and when you read the Sanskrit, I don't have time to go over it. The words even have more flavor. But listen, and his glories, they had heard about Krishna, their beloved, and his glories became the constant ornament of their ears. So what makes ears beautiful? Nice earrings. Anybody have nice earrings? Kadamba? They make your ears more beautiful. Gail? So what really... What really makes the ears beautiful? Champak, you have some earrings? No? Okay. What really makes the ears beautiful is hearing. Krishna's cows, they don't, their ears are not this way. They're up. Because it's like when they hear his flute and the nectar of his flute, they don't want to let the nectar out, so they go up. So the constant... And the Sanskrit is just so beautiful. It goes like this. Udaya Karna Purai, which were the Karna Purai, the glories, Priyatama, of their most beloved, became the ornaments of their ears. Indeed, their minds were completely absorbed in him. Through the aperture of their eyes, they are now forced him to enter within their hearts. And then they embraced him for a long time. In this way, they finally gave up the pain of separation from him. Just as sages give up the anxiety of false ego by embracing the inner consciousness. So they repeatedly heard the glories, and it filled their ears and perfected them, just like ornaments perfect the ears. And interesting, by this, they gave up the pain of separation. So this is Vyabhichari Bhav. There's a feelings of separation. Intense love has separation. So the separation is increasing that. And now there's union. And then the flow of love is like a river. Come on in. Come on. Just like a river. For a river to flow very powerfully, for the river to flow very powerfully, it has to have two embankments, right? If a river only has one embankment, it doesn't flow. So in this lila, this prema is like a river. For it to flow powerfully, it has to have two embankments. It has to have the embankment of separation and the embankment of union. So in the Leela, sometimes there'll be this intense separation and then there'll be union. But when the union gets too much, then the separation. When Lord Chaitanya, I'm looking at the clock and what we have to relish, you can't imagine. But I'll do this. Lord Chaitanya, in his last days, he concentrated on his personal practices in a cave-like room called the Gambhira. And he would chant. And to nourish his sambandha, his relationship with the name, he would hear the songs and stories of the person whose name he was chanting in the relationship he was aspiring for with the person whose name he was chanting. So they would bring him, and everyone would write all this literature. When it's perfectly composed, it's called Rasa Shastra. And they would check it, because if any of the ingredients was not perfect, right, then it wouldn't invoke the feelings, so they wouldn't give it to him. So Sarup Damodar was a Rasika Vaishnav. He understood, Rasika Vaishnav, he understood this science. And if a literature wasn't perfectly composed, he would reject it. And then, while Lord Chaitanya was chanting, if he was feeling too much separation, then Sarup Damodar and Ramananda Roy would begin to sing the songs of union and the stories of union. Radha Krishna Pranamora Yugala Kishora Jivane Marani Gati Aro Nahi Mor Kulindira Kuli Kaili Kandambaravan Ratana Bedira Upara Bosa. They would sing Radha Krishna Pranamora Yugala. They're my life, Radha and Krishna, prana more. They're my prana, my life, Yugala Kishore. Jivane Marani Gati, Aran is no other goal in life or death. Kulindira Kuli Kaili, Kandambaravan, and they're in a forest of Kadamba trees. Ratanabot, Ratanabe Dira Uparabo, and they're sitting on jeweled thrones. But then when the feelings of union would get too much, then they would start singing the songs of separation. And that way they would keep Lord Chaitanya's flow of prema flowing so powerfully. So here, now their separation is relieved. And now they're feeling the jubilation. And all this is just increasing and increasing unlimitedly their sentiments of love. And giving up the anxiety, just like giving up the anxiety of false ego, by embracing the inner consciousness, the anxiety of false ego. The anxiety of false ego is I'm the controller. I want to be the controller. But the anxiety, because I'm not the controller of the world. And this I have, I fear I'm going to lose. And this I don't have, I fear I'll never get. And then even when you get everything, you're in anxiety. So that false ego is always just total anxiety. And as a sage, he gives up that anxiety by embracing their inner consciousness, of love, which is not dependent on the external circumstances. The anxiety is gone materially. Because when your consciousness is love, it doesn't matter how God moves the world. It's just a different circumstance by which I am to serve in love. So they gave up that anxiety by just withdrawing everything, Krishna, into their hearts, into their consciousness. Lord Krishna, who witnesses the thoughts of all creatures, understood how those ladies had abandoned all worldly hopes and they simply came to see him. Thus he addressed them with a smile on his face. So he says, Swagatam. So, 1 second. So this is darshan. And what does Krishna see? Tyakta sarva asha. They have given up all other hopes or desires. They only want to love. They only want to serve God. They're fully surrendered to that. They're letting go of what? Anything born of the false ego. They're embracing fully the will of God. They've given Chaktva Sarva everything they give, and they're offering to him. And Krishna, who witnesses, he is the seer. He's seeing this. And he's become so pleased because this is full love. And that's what pleasure is. And this is the existential platform of pleasure. They've given up everything. To whatever extent we have a relationship like that, we feel some happiness. Where there's somebody or some person who we feel to a certain extent is looking at our needs before their own. That type of feeling. So Krishna says, Swagatam, welcome, O most fortunate ladies. Please make yourself comfortable. What can I do for you? That you have come here to see me is appropriate. So this is so beautiful. Karavama Kim, what can I do? Swagatam, Mahabhaga. This is fortunate. When you can come to that consciousness, spiritual consciousness, that's so fortunate. You've come to see me rejecting all hindrances. I am offering you swagatam, an auspicious welcome. What can I do? Napariye hum. What does Krishna tell the gopis? When the gopis come and give up everything, including their reputation, their possessions, they give up everything and they come to Krishna, what does Krishna tell them? Napariye hum. There is no way I can repay you. Because I am loving everyone and you are loving me. Your love is so great that what can I do that's better than your love? What can I do? But that you've come here is appropriate. It's not inappropriate. And then Krishna will explain by his Leela Shakti, he'll now take the position of God and explain to him that I am God. And your true interest, is to render unmotivated and uninterrupted devotional service, for I am Atma Priya, I am the most dear. And then he explains, by the contact with the self, the breath, the intelligence, the mind, the body, the wife, the children, they become dear. Therefore, what object can possibly be more dear than one's own self? And I am the Atma of the Atma. I am the self of the self. So what can be more dear, what can be more in your interest than to serve God? What makes everything valuable is your soul, and what makes your soul valuable is God. This is why I go to India, because I can do this every day. All right? Every day at 4 o'clock, I can come out, I can speak. It's just natural there in Vrindavan, isn't it? To speak. So this is good. This is why this is an intimate group. Not everyone can hear this. But now, oh, now what Krishna says, you should thus return to the sacrificial arena, because your husbands, the learned Brahmins, are householders and need your assistance to finish their respective sacrifice. Wow. What happens to their hearts, right? Vyabhachari Bhavs. Now they're like angry, right? That rascal, we come here, we gave up everything, you know, depressed. This is what you do. All these emotions are coming now. You see what this Leela does? It just enhances all the emotions. And you can go back. You should return, because you achieved success by seeing me. Now go. Why should we go? This is all from the commentaries. Out of mercy for your husbands, as I am the super soul, I'm always embracing your body so you can go. Your husbands need your assistance. Together with the sacrifice, you'll accomplish what is meant for me, and you'll see me. And what do they say? The wives of the Brahmins replied, O mighty one, please do not speak such cruel words. Rather, you should fulfill your promise that you always reciprocate with your devotees in kind. Now that we have attained your lotus feet, we simply wish to remain here in the forest so you may carry upon our heads the garlands of tulsi leaves that you may neglectfully kick away from your lotus feet. We are ready to give up all material relationships. Nigama. Nigama means it's Shastra. Follow Shastra, Krishna. Ye yata mam prapadyante tam stataiva bhajam. As one surrenders to me, I reward accordingly. We've given up everything, and now you say go away? You say you always give shelter to devotees? Now we surrendered everything, tucked for sarva. We gave up all hopes, all desires, ruined our reputations, ruined our families, destroyed everything. And now, Nigama, you're saying, follow the Shastra. You say my devotee never perishes, but we're going to die. And you say that one who goes to you never again returns to the world, and you're sending us back. But maybe you're afraid, because it won't look good. And why won't it look good? Because we're young ladies of aristocratic families with the highest class Brahmins. How can we surrender to the feet of a mere cowherd boy? You know who the cowherd boys are? The Gwalas? You go to the Goshalas in India, the guys with the gumshoes and the cow dung all over them. Now the aristocrat, we're aristocratic Brahmins. To this, the ladies have replied. The Krishna would say, "You're young ladies. So how can you surrender to the feet of a cowherd boy?" The ladies replied, "Since we have already surrendered at your lotus feet, and we have desired to become your servants." We should write a drama on this one, okay? I will guide you, and we'll write a drama. We are obviously not maintaining a false identification of members of so-called Brahmin families. You can easily ascertain this. We surrendered to you. We've given up all these false designations. So Krishna replied, "But I'm a cowherd boy, and my proper maidservants and girlfriends are the gopis. I'm a gopa. I need gopis." Then the wives of the Brahmins, and this comes from this, they say, "True, let them be so. Let them shine forth if you're embarrassed in front of your relatives to make Brahmin ladies your maidservants. We certainly don't want to embarrass you. We will not go to your village, but we'll remain in Vrindavan like presiding deities of the forest, simply desire to perfect our own life by even a slight connection with you." We don't have to go. Just let us now, we'll reside in the forest, and when you embrace the gopis and some tulsi leaves may fall on the ground, we'll put them on our heads. If it's going to cause you any, we simply wish to remain in the forest so we may carry upon our heads the garlands of tulsi leaves you may neglectfully kick away from your lotus feet. We are ready to give up all material relationships. Now, what happens here now is they do go home, and Krishna gives them instructions which are so essential and explains to them everything will be okay. But he says, "Go home. The best way to increase your love for me is the mood of separation and remembering me. It is by hearing about me, seeing my deity form, meditating upon me, and chanting my names and glories that your love for me develops, not by physical proximity. Therefore, please go back to your home. Closeness to God is not physical proximity, it's consciousness." And what happens is they go back home, and there's one lady that was prevented by the husband from going. And when she sees them, and when they go back, when she sees them, when she hears the others describe Lord Krishna, she embraces him into her heart and she leaves her body. And she achieves complete spiritual perfection in relationship to Krishna. And when the other Brahmin wives, so the one that didn't go was the one that actually achieved perfection, and the other wives, by seeing this, they also achieve perfection. And when the husbands see this, and then Krishna takes the food, when the husbands see this and they take note of their wives' devotion, they say, "We have sinned. We have denied the request of our two lords." Taking note of their wives' pure transcendental devotion and seeing their own lack of devotion, the Brahmins began to feel sorrowful and began to condemn themselves. And then the Brahmins said a famous verse, which will end because I always keep on time. Digjanmanastri vidyatat drigvritam drigbahugatam Dikulam dikriya daksham vimukaye tvadoksha. The Brahmin said, "To hell with our threefold birth, our vows of celibacy, and our extensive learning. To hell with our aristocratic background and our expertise in the rituals of sacrifice. These are all condemned because we're inimical to the transcendental personality of Godhead. To hell with it all," is the famous to hell verse. And the idea was, the idea is, if you're inimical to God and you turn away from God, then everything is useless, because the meaning and value of everything is in relationship to what it's part of. So they realize that all religion is useless if you don't achieve the objective of developing love in your heart for God. And the Brahmins were using religion for material promotion. And then they realized, what's the use? When they saw the real faith, that everyone is trying to achieve happiness, and their wives have the highest goal, the highest happiness, love for God. Anyway, that's about all I could say now. And the Brahmins condemn themselves. And they accept their wives as their spiritual masters. Just see the unlimited love these women have developed for Lord Krishna, the spiritual master of the universe. This love has broken for them the very bonds of death, attachment to this world. Anyway, that's what we'll cover now. But it's so relishable, actually. And I'm like feeling so much now Vrindavan. And I pray, Krishna lets me back. Who knows where he'll send you or what service he'll give. In fact, on the 16th, I think I'm going to have a kirtan in Gopki Shores. That's a Tuesday. Alexandra, if you tell Alexandra Moga, Julie, you came last time. Alexandra Moga, pick you up. But I'm thinking Vrindavan, and this is the real mood of Vrindavan. I'm so happy to give it here in the Bhakti Center, because of course the mood is service and everything, but this kind of juice is where the service is supposed to wind up. So it's so relishable. Okay, we'll end for now. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay, hare Ram.